This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 8:48 a.m. on Wednesday, the 20th of April. You're listening to The Morning Run with me, Melissa Idris, also Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani. Christoph Mueller has announced he will step down as Malaysia Airlines CEO starting September. And this is ahead of the expiry of his three-year contract. So he was appointed, I believe it was last year, to turn around Malaysia Airlines. But he's said he's not staying till the end of that contract.
I think this is highly suspicious because when you have a meeting of minds to cement that decision into a contract, and there is a quitting 2 years ahead of the expiry of the contract, we really have to ask the question why this happened, because Malaysian Airlines is an entity that is of utmost importance to the nation. Tens of billions have leaked out of the country has been spent to bail out Malaysian Airlines, and they have just set themselves on this path of reform and restructuring. This is not something that you want happening for this airline at this stage of their history.
Yeah, so you know, what was he brought in for? He was brought in to turn around the airline, and he at the beginning of that they decided it's a three-year contract, right? Decided 3 years is going to be what's necessary to turn it around, to see some results. But if he can't, I mean, you know what I mean, that was the time frame that was given, and if he left halfway through, that clearly speaks to something, to the fact that Malaysia Airlines impossible to turn around.
I think we're going to call a spade a spade, right? Was there intervention? Was there government intervention?
Yeah, that is the first question, right? Was Christoph Mueller allowed to do his job?
I think the answer is yes. Most probably, Christoph Mueller was allowed to do his job. But because Khazanah Nasional predominantly owns Malaysia Airlines Berhad, Khazanah Nasional sees themselves as having the prerogative to also ask Mueller to do what it wants as well. So there's going to be a conflict of interest between what Khazanah wants and what they've mandated Christoph Mueller wants to do.
I don't buy that.
I don't necessarily. Okay, so I'm conflicted about this. I'm of two minds. I see what Christoph Mueller has done. Granted, he's only been there for a year, but he has cut. I mean, he's cut jobs, he's cut costs, he's cut supplier contracts, he's gotten Malaysia Airlines to post the first quarterly profit that it has in many years. But then on the other hand, I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute, if he's, you know, starting to get results, why is he then
exactly
leaving?
And to me, one of the greatest achievements of Christoph Mueller is, to me, he's like a general who's leading a very wounded platoon of soldiers. And the first thing you do when you lead such a team is that you don't want to go right out there and take on the enemy because you get even more wounded. So he has regrouped, and his major strategy is to really try to heal the wounds first by cost cutting, by doing all that cost rationalization, which would be something that is unthinkable if you really think about it. It's not thinkable for an airline, for a major airline, to really cut your international routes and to reduce yourself to becoming a regional airline, right? That's not something that you do normally, but these are extraordinary circumstances for Malaysian Airlines. And he very forcefully and decisively did that just to put Mars on, or MAB as it is known now, on a recovery path.
Well, he joins a long list of CEOs, Ahmad Jauhari, Azmil Zahruddin, Dato' Idris Jalla. All these guys were helming that company. The question now is, who will be the boss? They already hired a temporary boss for now, making Peter Bellew the executive director of the MAB board of directors. He will also assume some executive duties as the management as well. He's already the COO, but I guess this is a stopgap measure. The problem now lies with, will it be a local or will it be a foreigner?
Do you think that matters? I mean, I've heard a lot of conversation around, oh, why do we need a foreigner? Do we not have locals? That conversation, I feel, is moot. The best man for the job, best woman for the job.
I mean, to me, the perennial question is whether Malaysian Airlines should be owned by the government at all.
That's the question.
That's the main question. But the sub-question of, if you really want to own Malaysian Airlines, how should you own it? And to answer your question, Melissa, I think it's a good thing, it's a healthy thing for an entity like Malaysian Airlines to be managed by a foreigner, because this foreigner should be able to act without fear or favour, without kowtowing to the local powers, as it were.
Well, you know, I mean, Christoph Mueller was so successful with Aer Lingus, right? So I don't want to lose hope for MAB, for Malaysia Airlines, but this is not a good sign, guys, not a good sign at all.
That's right.
But in other aviation news, the Department of Civil Aviation, DCA, they will continue with the 10-fold revision of fees imposed on airline operators, but they say they're going to do this over a certain period of time, a scheduled manner, they reckon. So the first increase has been implemented on April 15th, that was last Friday, where they increased it 100%, so a twofold hike.
Yeah, they said that this twofold hike is not going to be burdensome to the airlines, and that the airlines can stomach that kind of costs. And I think he has good measure for saying so.
DCA Director General Dato Sri Azharuddin Abdul Rahman said that the airline should be able to absorb the cost because it results in only a 5 to 10 cent increase. Now, I think this is really interesting, because if this is a per ticket sort of increased 5 cent to 10 cent, then I think it's not very much. It's pretty easy for the airlines to stomach that kind of cost increase. But based on the original intention to raise it by 1,000%, just working backwards, that would result in 25 ringgit to 50 ringgit per ticket. And that, I think, is harder for people to accept.
So this very concept of it's being hard for people to accept has been reviewed by international bodies. In fact, the European Aviation Safety Agency, ESA, Director Peter Kai has named Malaysia and Indonesia as one of the two countries in Southeast Asia whose civil aviation authorities do not possess the skills and resources to effectively oversee their growing airlines. Now, this is a pretty strong statement.
Wow.
Because the DCA...
What? They say that,
that is power,
that's scary.
They have been criticized by international bodies. And, you know, for them to increase 10 times have invoked that kind of comments from overseas
observers.
Maybe
it's that chicken and egg situation, right? They need this 1,000% increase to come through so that they don't get such criticisms from the EASA.
Okay.
So should you get the cost first, or should you improve yourself first? I think that this is very crucial. This concerns the safety of travellers, and you have to get this through. You cannot operate in artificial situations where you're operating way below cost.
Shouldn't government subsidies actually stop that kind of argument? The government subsidies should come in to allow for you to improve on your services, then you can later increase the price.
Or don't you think that the DCA should be market efficient? So market players should be paying. And I'm not saying consumers, I'm saying market players. So airline operators should be thinking about paying the DCA fees.
Do you think travellers are rich? Because taxes should be progressive, right? And if this is representing a tax to travellers, is it fair? Or is it fair for the government to say this is a kind of social safety net which the government should finance 100%? I don't think the government should finance this, because travellers should pay for this. Especially, I think travellers would be among the, on average, higher income than the average Malaysian or the average citizen, I think.
Okay, that's definitely a question to put out there. But 8:56 right now. In other news, 1MDB President Arul Kanda, yesterday he was on Bloomberg TV, and in that interview he said, look, 1MDB has the cash surplus to pay the $50 million in interest due, but it says it will not do so because the obligation to pay is with IPIC.
That's right. He says that this is part of a transaction between IPIC and 1MDB. He also says in our Breakfast Grill that this is critical towards the rationalization plan of 1MDB. Here he is in his own words.
The other parts of the rationalization plan is a debt for asset swap with IPIC of Abu Dhabi, in which they will assume payment of interest and principal on a portion of our debt in return for us transferring certain assets to them. So each of these transactions in totality will result in 1MDB being in a position to either repay in full its debt and or match the future interest and principal on debt that will mature in the future.
So does this mean that they can't therefore meet the debt obligations to be paid in the future? I guess this is the very reason why Moody's Investor Services have said that this has put them at a very real default risk.
Well, you know, Arul is saying, in this interview yesterday on Bloomberg TV, he said the cash surplus of 1MDB is 11 times the 50 million due. So he says, they've got the cash for it. They just don't want to do it on principle. But they say, look, we're talking to IPIC. We will reach an amicable decision. But the question is, what if they don't reach an amicable decision? Then I think that's where the Moody's comment comes into play. There could be a huge risk here.
That statistic that was given by Arul, I think what he's trying to say is that at the 11th hour, they can come in and actually pay off the interest debt to prevent a full default. I think that's what he's saying. But it is also, the TIFF actually is also very bad news for the capital markets in Malaysia, because last year was the year of the 1MDB saga, and arguably the ringgit and the capital markets in Malaysia had been affected by it. And investors are ready to forget the saga and move on. You know, our market has gone up, the ringgit has strengthened, inflows are coming back in, but this TIFF is bringing back investors' focus to that kind of fears about Malaysia's sovereign risk. And this risk might only be perceived, but there can be a case where one Apple spoils the entire lot.
Yeah, but this whole credit default will have a knock-on effect. Already we see CDS yield jump 16 bips from 140 plus 148 to 164. Mm-hmm. This will also have the yield curve bending towards other corporates as well. We're going to see Tenaga bonds rising in prices. We're going to see Sapura Kencana
falling.
Yeah. So you see these kind of knock-on effects affects other corporates as well. It's not just about 1MDB, it's about the corporate Malaysia.
And not to mention all the new debt that could be issued this year as well, right? We're coming up to the opening bell at Bursa Malaysia. Over to Nadia Aziz for the News Bulletin on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.